Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we locked horns over the case of Jamal Khashoggi and also climate change. We also had a discussion about Brexit. I hope you enjoy listening. Thanks again for tuning in.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. Every Wednesday afternoon, we're joined by Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio to get a feel and understanding of what's happening around the world and also to get an understanding of what the news is around the world, and much of it, of course, having to do with us here in the States. And I'm looking forward to that conversation this afternoon with Tom. Tom's joining us, of course. This portion is being pre-recorded because he's in London, England, some 5 hours ahead of the broadcast of the program. As we begin the program, Tom, good afternoon to you, or actually good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening to you too, Lockwood.
And my question for you, as I like to start off the day, is how's the weather in London?
Oh, it's a bit wet and drizzly today. It's been not too bad, and it's supposed to improve. We're having a very nice autumn.
Wow.
I think, you know, global warming's not a bad thing. I'm planning to get out there with my hairspray and spray it up into the atmosphere, see what I can do.
Okay, good for you. Well, we've stopped using the sprays here in the States, so you should stop using them there in the European community. We'll just make a casual comment and say that Tom and I were discussing before the beginning of the program the whole issue of global warming, but and climate change, but we'll not belabor that today because, well, I don't want to embarrass our guest, but no, our foreign editor. Tom, before we get into too many of the details of the world politic, I've got to ask an issue of news coverage of particular interest, several stories that have broken recently here in the States, and I'm just curious if they're making much headway or of interest there in the European community. One of them, of course, having to do with Stormy Daniels and the fact that she has, and her last name I think is Clifford, but anyhow, her stage name, we'll use that. Stephanie Clifford, okay. But Stormy Daniels, as she is known by many, her lawsuit of defamation against the president was turned back. Has that gotten much coverage there?
They can't quite understand it over here, the First Amendment. They think First Amendment's great, freedom of press, freedom of speech, but why does it prevent libel? You know, the idea that because you're a public figure, you can say whatever you like about someone and not be subject to the same laws as someone else is a bit of an anathema to people on this side of the Atlantic. Stormy Daniels' basic case has not been thrown out. It's only the case that where Trump called her a liar and she sued him for saying that she was a liar.
Defamation, right.
Well, the basic underlying case is still there, they can't quite get their head around how you can call someone a liar and just get away with it.
Well, if you're not a public figure, and of course, arguably, Ms. Clifford is a public figure.
Both public figures. There's no doubt about that.
So
it's just that why are they not protected by law just like everyone else?
Well, the court made its decision. I just thought it was interesting.
I know it's the First Amendment.
And
over here that is seen as a weakness in the interpretation of the First Amendment.
We would argue that on the contrary, there may be some strength to it, but that's okay. Another item associated with this, and it's right up there with that, the topic of Indian heritage. We have a senator who has been laying claim to the fact that she is a member of the Cherokee Nation, Elizabeth Warren. What kind of coverage has that been getting?
I don't think she's ever said specifically she's a member of the Cherokee Nation. Says she has Indian blood in her. That's getting a lot of coverage. I think basically people are saying, Elizabeth Warren has made a mistake. She is several generations back. Someone slept with an Indian. Fine, great. Does that make her an Indian? No, it doesn't make her an Indian. The argument is, I think a lot of people here have said, so what? what about that Martin Luther King Jr. comment about judging someone by the content of their character rather than the color of their skin or their ethnic background. Isn't that what really counts? Now, you know, that's how it's reported over here. I think I know in the case of Elizabeth Warren that there are a lot of people who claim that she got her foot on the rung of the legal ladder, the first rung of the legal ladder, by claiming that she was from a minority group. But she's certainly proven since then that she deserved to be there.
There would be some question as to that last remark as to whether or not she's been of value to her culture or to her profession. But that aside...
What, to a legal profession? She taught at Harvard Law School.
That aside...
You don't get to teach at Harvard Law School unless you're very good.
No, that's not necessary, unless you're well-connected. But that's another story. One would argue then that the fact that Brett Kavanaugh has been teaching at Harvard Law School and, of course, now has been asked not to teach there because of some spurious accusation, one wonders, what's your opinion of Justice Kavanaugh?
I don't really care about the spurious accusation. I think the way he handled himself before the committee was absolutely atrocious.
Well,
and I think he should be disqualified for that reason.
No.
But that's my opinion. Only my opinion. And really, you know, if he's going to be up there, that's fine. I'm not as fussed about Judge Kavanaugh.
Well, back to the issue. Back to the issue.
I said, on the content of their character.
And by the way, the character involved in Elizabeth Warren is of question. And by the way, she did, in fact, lay claim, even with the acknowledgement of a cookbook, that she had a definite
share. Yeah, Chow Pao, whatever.
Yeah, the other interesting thing associated with that is the breadth of the association of her DNA. And by the way, has it been covered in the European community that the Cherokee Nation, the tribes...
Oh, yes. Yes, that has been covered. And I think quite rightly, the Cherokee Nation is saying basically, it's a bit like claiming you're Jewish when several generations before, I mean, Jews are very touchy about this.
Okay, I don't want to...
They will not let you claim Israeli citizenship or any Jewish heritage unless your mother is Jewish.
Tom, in the United States, there's a lot of focus on ethnic background, on racial background, even on religious background, relative to the qualifications for whatever the job may be. Is that same focus applied in, for example, the United Kingdom or the European community? Do the folks in France...
Yes, they do have an element of positive discrimination. I don't think it is as pronounced, although I'm not certain. I don't think it's as pronounced as it is in the United States. I ran my own company for 25 years. I hired people of every race, color, and creed to work on my staff.
So
at all times, the...
Was that a
the
criteria?
Main criteria was, could they do the job?
Okay, that's what I'm saying. The criteria was, could they do the job? Now, the other interesting thing associated with this, and we'll just touch on this briefly, and again, I'm wondering if this is getting covered there in the European community. We mentioned Harvard a few moments ago, and of course, the extreme blue blood nature of the Harvard faculty and student body there, which is obviously the creme de creme, unless it's Judge Brett Kavanaugh, now Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Is there any coverage about the fact that Harvard is being sued by an ethnic group? As a matter of fact,
yes.
Asian Americans.
You sent me an email asking whether or not the same problems arise here.
Uh-huh.
And yes, they do. There is only a very small community of blacks, or we call them blacks here rather than African Americans, because obviously not African Americans, or Afro-Caribbeans. Is another word used to describe the black community here. There's only a very small community at Oxford and Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of criticism of what they call the Oxford University or universities for not taking more from ethnic minorities.
In this particular case, these plaintiffs are saying they were specifically and intentionally denied. I don't know that that's been the case necessarily.
I don't know
Oxford.
How you prove it.
Well, that's the case. I'm just wondering if it's being covered. I'm trying to.
It's being covered.
Okay.
And it's being covered within the context also of what the universities here are doing.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, we're going to get back to that and more here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to advise you one more time, yes, this portion has been pre-recorded here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us again in advance of the airing of this program, it is some 5 hours ahead where he lives in London, England. All right, Tom, so many other things to talk about, and we'll stay here for a few minutes on the issue of the U.S. We were chatting about items in the U.S. specifically, but let's talk here for a moment on the topic of the U.S.-Saudi relations. And this is a big story. And I'm wondering, does it have influence in the European community as well, since Saudi Arabia and the Emirates are such a key player in the world of energy? So tell us the observations there and the concerns.
Not just the world of energy. They're key players politically. Yes, this is being covered ad nauseum. And basically, people are very, very worried that, what is the United States going to do? I mean, it seems pretty certain, although it has not been confirmed, it seems pretty certain that Jamal Khashoggi went into the consulate
in Turkey,
probably was interrogated and died as a result of the interrogation and torture, was chopped up into pieces, and then taken out.
Where's the proof? I mean, it's great speculation.
The Turks apparently have an audio tape of this occurring. So that, at the moment, is the only proof.
Who have they shared it with anyone?
It says it looks likely. Now, Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, seems to be taking the standard authoritarian lie. Deny, deny, deny. It's not going to work unless he can produce Jamal Khashoggi and alive. Otherwise, people can assume that he went in and he didn't come out. So something must have happened to him when he was in there. I think more important is, what effect is this going to have on U.S. foreign policy? Because that is the $64,000 question. And what could have been done to prevent the effect that it's going to have? Because it's going to have an effect. And it's not just the $110 billion worth of arms deals that I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
That's small. What I'm talking about is the effect it's going to have on Iran. It's going to strengthen Iran because Saudi Arabia is our regional bulwark against Iran.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to weaken Saudi Arabia in the civil war in the Yemen. It's going to make it more difficult because Saudi Arabia is a key player in Jared Kushner's plans for an Arab-Israeli agreement. So that's going to make that more difficult too. You know, a whole host of things that could be affected.
What effect does this have on the European community's relations with, for example, Saudi Arabia and those countries of which you've spoken, Yemen and Iran, for example?
The European community, a lot of them are canceling the visit to what they're calling the Arab Davos Summit, just like American businessmen are. You know, but I quite honestly think the Europeans are going to let the Americans take the flak for this and go swooping in there and pick up the deals that Congress is going to be blocking.
One other comment, and let's talk about the relations of Saudi Arabia and Turkey. They are not necessarily bosom buddies, are they?
Oh, they haven't been for a long time.
Okay. So my point is, Turkey wins big if they can create enough of a divide between Saudi Arabia and its current allies.
Turkey would probably, if they were having good relations with Saudi Arabia at the moment, they probably would be keeping their mouth shut. That does not prove that Turkey's lying. It just proves that Turkey is prepared to take advantage of the situation.
Right. My question, have they shared the documents that you've referenced?
It has been released.
Okay.
I haven't seen them, but it has been released to certain Turkish media, and it's been released to the CIA and to the White House.
Okay, I find it.
And Trump is apparently listening to the audio tapes.
Okay.
And
I'm glad you know what
his face is being drained of blood.
Okay, I'm
he's seriously worried. He should be.
I'm glad you're aware of more of the activities of the president than I. But the real kicker here is I find it fascinating that President Erdogan of Turkey is sharing all this information with the media, the very people that he has been imprisoning and in some instances killing. Minor detail.
If it suits him, he will.
I just find it fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, that's politics, you know. You lock them up one day, and you give them a juicy story the next.
Lock them up and or kill them,
yeah.
Which he has done. And I just find it fascinating that so many in the media are losing.
I don't think Erdogan has yet killed any journalists. Bulgarians have, the Romanians have, the Maltese have.
I just find it fascinating that this has created such a round of concern across the globe when we have so many other journalists who have been imprisoned and murdered. Let that lay fallow for a moment. Let's move on to other items.
He's put about 1,000 journalists in prison.
Yeah. And we're concerned about a journalist with the Washington Post, which
he was killed inside the Saudi consulate.
Wait a second.
Come on, you can't belittle that. Lockwood. That's wrong to belittle anything like that.
Wait a second. If they kill them on the city streets, that's right. Let's not belabor the point.
He was told he had to come into the consulate. No. He was effectively lured into the consulate. And then tortured and killed, and his body was chopped up into little pieces.
Hold on.
That is what we think happened to him. We don't know for sure.
Did somebody say fake news? Look, let's move on to other items. Let's talk here for a moment, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Climate change and Trump's 60-minute interview. You've got a note on here.
The headline that grabbed everyone's attention over here is Trump's claim that scientists have a political agenda. And we briefly spoke about this beforehand, and I think you're right. The scientists do have a political party, which they support. It's called Save the Planet Party.
and we're gonna have to start that one.
I can't see that they have a vested interest. These scientists, a lot of them work for things like oil companies. I can't see that they have a vested interest in saying that man-made activities are affecting the world's climate.
That has generated a lot of conversation there in the European community.
Yes, they see that as ignorance on the part of Donald Trump.
Needless to say, I think our foreign editor, Tom Arms, is in lockstep with that opinion as well. All right, we're going to get back to more here in a moment. Coming up, I want to change the focus from that of the Western Atlantic that is being found by the United States to the Eastern Atlantic. We're going to talk more about Great Britain and Brexit. And I got to find out about this thing called Brexit Preppers. Brexit Preppers. Stay with us here on Viewpoints on the Talk Station, our afternoon program, of course, pre-recorded with our foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio here on Viewpoints.
LookAhead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The extremely likely interrogation, torture, and murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi Arabian consulate in Istanbul is set to have far-reaching consequences. The position of Iran, the civil war in Yemen, the Arab-Israeli conflict, reform in Saudi Arabia, the tenure of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the economic development of Saudi Arabia, U.S. foreign policy, and the credibility of President Trump will all be affected. I should add the caveat that as of this broadcast, there is no body, and the Saudis continue to deny, deny, deny. But so far, they have failed to explain why Mr. Khashoggi went into the consulate to keep a 1:15 appointment on the 2nd of October and has never been seen since. Neither have they offered an explanation as to why he was preceded and followed by Saudi agents, some of whom carried what are believed to be bone-cutting tools. Finally, the Saudi officials have failed to explain an audio recording which strongly indicates the interrogation and torture of Jamal Khashoggi. The onus is on the autocratic ruler of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, a.k.a. MBS, to either produce a live Jamal Khashoggi or a credible explanation for his disappearance. So far, he has only shrugged his shoulders, arched his eyebrows, and replied, "I don't know. Nothing to do with me." The immediate victim of the Khashoggi affair has been MBS's Showcase Economics Summit, the Future Investment Initiative, due to start in Riyadh on the 23rd of October. The meeting was organized to attract foreign investment and to kickstart the Crown Prince's ambitious Vision 2030 economic plan. This is designed to transform Saudi Arabia from an oil-dependent, theocratic kingdom into a socially, politically, and economically diverse modern state. Dozens of key players are protesting against Mr. Khashoggi's disappearance by refusing to attend. MBS's super showcase is threatening to turn into a damp squib. The Saudis need the money, and not just to diversify their economy. They need to pay for the $110 billion U.S. arms deal that Trump announced at the start of his administration. They need the weapons to continue to fight their controversial war in Yemen and stand as a regional bulwark against an increasingly aggressive Iran. From the West's point of view, Saudi oil is less important than 10 years ago. American success in tapping new resources with fracking techniques has completely altered the global energy picture. In June, U.S. oil production hit a record high of 2.2 million barrels a day, and America has returned to the glory days of being a net energy exporter. If, as threatened by Saudi officials, the Desert Kingdom imposes an oil boycott in response to possible congressional sanctions over the Khashoggi affair, it can only push up world oil prices and help the U.S. oil industry. Politics, however, are another matter. The Trump administration has put too many eggs in the basket marked personal relationship with Mohammed bin Salman. The president invested substantial political capital in the Crown Prince by making his first foreign trip to Riyadh. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, flies in and out of the Saudi capital. MBS is said to be his new best friend and a keystone figure in Kushner's yet-to-be-unveiled and much-trailed Arab-Israeli peace plan. On top of that, MBS is the driving force behind the anti-Iranian U.S.-Saudi alliance. By developing a foreign policy based almost entirely on personal chemistry with MBS, the Trump administration has backed itself into the Crown Prince's corner. MBS is being blamed for the disappearance of Khashoggi. He was blamed for the detention of Lebanese Premier Saad Hariri and hundreds of dissenting members of the Saudi royal family. The Crown Prince could fall from power over the Khashoggi affair and would most likely be replaced by religious hardliners. If he does, America's Middle East strategy and the credibility of Donald Trump will be dealt a severe blow.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And of course, Tom's joining us a little early in the program, or in the day, actually. We're pre-recording this since he is some 5 hours ahead of us. Tom, Brexit and a lot of news I'm seeing, great deal of concern about Theresa May's future as prime minister. And I mentioned as we went to the break a few moments ago, I saw an interesting story, I think it was in the Washington Post earlier today, about a group called Brexit Preppers. In fact, it's something like, I think, 48 Brexit Preppers or Brexit Peppers 48. And of course, the 48 refers to the 48% that voted to remain. And the Brexit preppers apparently are consolidating all of their supplies for toilet paper, water, canned goods, things of this nature, for fear that there will be a hard Brexit in the near term. And when it happens, access to all of these products and services and goods will be extremely limited, very costly, et cetera, et cetera. So
it's not a hard Brexit. It's a no-deal Brexit.
Oh, no-deal Brexit. Okay.
We have hit a brick wall in talks between the UK and EU.
I thought
total impasse.
Oh, I thought we were talking last week that they had.
Now you were saying that last week.
I
was saying I'm not certain.
Okay, let's talk about this. I was more certain about that. It's similar to the certitude you gave a few moments ago related to Mr. Khashoggi, his death, etc. Let's talk about the situation of Brexit. What's happening there?
Well, it's Ireland. Basically, the whole thing appears to hinge on the border between southern and northern Ireland. The EU wants Northern Ireland to be in a customs union with Ireland, and that the customs barrier between the province of Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. So this would mean that it would tie the North and the South closer together, which is exactly what the Protestant majority in Northern Ireland violently, and I mean violently, opposes. Now, you have to remember that Mrs. May is dependent on the Protestants in Northern Ireland for her political survival.
Mm-hmm.
And so she won't do anything which, as she says, will threaten the territorial integrity of the UK. Okay? At the same time, the open border between North and South is seen as integral to peace on the island. Ever since the Northern Ireland, what they call the Good Friday Agreement. But the EU says that if the border remains completely open and that there's an open customs border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, then the EU has effectively opened the back door for customs-free trade for British businessmen and given the UK an unfair economic advantage.
Hmm.
So that's the reason why they're completely deadlocked. I can't see a way around it. They're meeting as we speak now.
What would be the impact of a no Brexit deal? I mentioned the preppers a few moments ago.
It's difficult to tell. There's all sorts of things which are being talked about. But basically, I think so much is tied up in regulations and everything else and customs and trade barriers that there wouldn't be time to sort out any sort of alternative agreements. So on the 29th of March, because there hasn't been time to sort these things out and there's no deal, a lot of things are going to just come to a stop.
And of course,
literally.
And that's
why people are stocking up on things like toilet paper. They're saying that a lot of food, especially meat products, which we get a lot of those from Europe, will not be found in British supermarkets. We'll all, you know, have to eat more vegetables.
Well, supposedly
that would be one thing.
Another that would thing be good was, for global warming. That would be good for, I'm sorry, for climate change, because
always look for the silver lining.
Absolutely.
I'll count on you to do that, Lockwood.
Oh, I work on that. Thank you very much.
Things like airline regulations, air traffic control, which are very tightly linked in with the EU.
Mm-hmm.
There would be delays to flights, delays to customs, because they would overnight have to put up customs barriers. Okay. And so they're saying that all the big trucks which carry goods back and forth between Britain and the continent would be subject to customs checks, whereas before they weren't. And so you'd have to overnight put in an infrastructure for that, where they wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, we can make arrangements at the Mexican border for them. Let's move on to other items. Associated with that, though, of course, is the political future for Theresa May.
Well, it's looking bleak. Let's just put it that.
Are we looking at the potential of a referendum?
Well, the problem with the referendum is we don't know what we'll be voting on, because there is no alternative now except a repeat of what we already have, which is in or out.
Okay.
Because if there's no deal, how can you vote on accepting no deal?
Let's move on to other items. Let's go to the continent. Let's talk about Angela Merkel in Germany.
Whoa, wait a minute. You're forgetting the royal baby.
Oh, okay. Okay, let's talk about the royal baby. Yes.
Ah, Meghan's having a baby.
Yes.
There's going to be an American princess or prince at the court of St. James in London. Because this, you know, Meghan's American.
Well, so
you have a half American prince or princess. I think it was very significant that they made the announcement in Australia.
Okay.
Because the Australians are going through another one of their stages of, you know, should we or should we not have links to the British monarchy? So by making the announcement there, they've
very
created a sea of goodwill for the royal family in Australia.
Oh, by the way, is this going to be covered? Is this big news?
Yeah, it is big news.
Okay.
Meghan is very popular. So is Harry.
Harry
seems to have a knack for dealing with the public, and Meghan is helped by the fact that she's an actress. You know, she enjoys playing a role, and she's doing a very good job of it.
We talked about this earlier, and there was I have to admit, there was a lot made about the racial background for Meghan. Okay.
I think more was made in the States than was made over here.
Very interesting. I'm glad you've clarified that. And really, that is important. Let's move to the continent and talk about Angela Merkel and Germany. What's the problem? You've got a note here. She's in trouble.
Oh, big problems. Big problems. Elections in Bavaria, where the Christian Social Union lost or was not the biggest party. Won a majority in the local regional elections for the first time since 1950.
Okay.
Now, Christian Social Union is the joined-at-the-hip partner of Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union Party. Mm-hmm. And Bavaria is seen as the German heartland, the soul of Germany, the cultural soul of Germany. So what happens in Bavaria is important.
Okay.
A lot is being made of the fact that the AfD, the anti-immigration party, did well.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a point. But at the same time, the Green Party, which is the most left wing of the parties, or the main parties, the Green Party did well. So effectively, the center party, the CSU and the Social Democratic Party, were squeezed out by the extremists, the Greens and the AfD.
Wow.
So both sides, both extreme sides of the political spectrum in Germany are doing well.
What does this
mean?
And
they are squeezing out the center.
All right. What does this mean for the relations with Germany and the rest of Europe?
Well, it could result in the collapse of Mrs. Merkel's party.
And
because her partners, her coalition partners, are the SPD and the CSU, both of whom now have to question whether they should stay in coalition with Mrs. Merkel's CDU party. Her coalition falls, that's going to weaken the EU because Germany will be weak.
Let's move on to talk about the immigrant shops in Italy, because immigration has been one of the keystones to the political upheaval in Europe, and I would argue even there in the United Kingdom. Now, my question is, what are the immigrant shops in Italy? What are we talking about?
Well, you know, I don't know if you have the same thing in the U.S., but here in the U.K., we have, well, in the U.S., you have 7-Eleven stores.
Uh-huh.
And in the UK, you have what are called corner shops. And they have similar type shops
in
Italy and elsewhere in Europe. And these tend to be operating first thing in the morning. They open at 6 or 7 in the morning. And they shut at like 11 or 12 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
And they are invariably run by hardworking immigrants who really are prepared to slave away, because that's the only sort of job they can get in order to get their family on the first rung of the national ladder. In Italy, because Matteo Salvini, the immigration minister, is really anti-immigration and anti-immigrants, he's going to close these shops down.
Wow. But he's
saying these shops are unfair competitors. And besides that, because they stay open late, they're being used by drug dealers and people like that to trade drugs.
It'd be interesting to see the political fallout, because those stores, those shops provide a service to a lot of customers. I'm curious, other than the threat, what has been the response from the public? Was there any calls of saying, how dare you? We actually enjoy these services?
Yeah, there have been some people who've said that. But then, you know, there's a growing anti-immigration lobby in Italy. There are people who support him, too.
It is interesting that the populist / national movement is such a worldwide issue. We'll get back to other items here in just a moment. We're talking, of course, with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And yes, to remind you once again that this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate the sleeping schedule of our foreign editor, Tom Arms of Look Ahead News and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I've got two items I want to touch on, and then I want to get to the denouement, the unwinding of the day. But the one story I find interesting, BBC political correctness. What is that about?
Yeah, I think, honestly, BBC in its reporting is pretty right down the middle. It gets attacked by both the left and the right in this country, so You know they must be doing the right thing. Uh-huh. But when it comes to internal politics, They drive me nuts. The latest is concerning policies towards the LGBT community. Uh-huh. And they want to be seen to be bending over backwards to be fair to the LGBT community and to support them. So they're going to ask the heterosexual members of staff if they would wear a badge identifying themselves as heterosexual and saying, "We support LGBT people." I think that's ridiculous. I mean, first of all, it's basically a bit like wearing a yellow star. You know, I'm a hetero. I'm straight. If you're not wearing it, you must be gay.
Tom,
now, why does it matter?
Wonderful observation on your Tom. If you're not careful, we're going to start thinking.
We agree. Oh no!
You're going to become a conservative. Be careful. All right. Final note, and we bring it all the way back to the circle because the name came up a little later earlier in the program. Bad news for Kavanaugh and good news for Macron on drinks front.
Terrible news.
Okay.
Terrible news for Kavanaugh.
Okay.
Because of climate change. the barley crops are being hit really hard. They are really very, very sensitive to climate change.
Uh-huh.
And so the price of beer is likely to double over the next few years. That is bad news for Kavanaugh. But I said it's good news for Macron because all of this heat coming down from the sun, all this climate change means that we are going to have a series of vintage wine years.
Mm.
So lots of wine coming up. If you like your wine, your Pinot Grigio, your Chardonnay, your Beaujolais, it's going to be absolutely fantastic for the foreseeable future. England is being turned into a wine-producing country.
Wow.
They're having a vintage year.
No, actually.
But beer is on the decline.
Well, wait a second. The real beers of the world are produced primarily, as a matter of fact,
with chemicals.
In Germany, in Bavaria, in Holland, and we've got to give the real beer capital of the world, Ireland, a special salute as well. So how is their beer production?
No, it's hitting. They're being hit. They're the ones. They get their barley,
mm-hmm.
and they, because of climate change, because it's too hot, apparently barley needs a lot of cold weather to grow properly and a lot more moisture. Because of this, all those beer-producing countries, the barley crop is being severely depleted, and it's causing the price of beer. They reckon it will double next year and possibly the year after and the year after that.
Well, we'll just be working closer with the French and the Italians and Australians. They also, and Germany has.
And the English winemakers.
English, right up there with English cuisine. I'm having a hard time imagining that, Tom. All right, Tom, with that said, thank you for being with us this evening, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World. Tom, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure discussing world events.
Absolutely. Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.